Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Second Act Actors. I'm your host, Dr. Jana McMorney, and I'm still a medical doctor simultaneously trying to pursue a career in acting. My guest this week is Salma Darcy. Oh, my goodness. I was trying to think back to when Salma and I actually met. I think maybe we met at an industry party or something like that. Anyway, regardless, I showed up to an acting class and there she was. It was so exciting. And this was an in-person acting class. You all know I've had all these amazing experiences popping onto Zoom acting classes and seeing people that I know and then meeting them in, you know, real life for the first time and it being very exciting. Salma and I are, I guess, post-pandemic friends. I got to meet her in person, and then I got to be in acting class with her in person. Oh my gosh, what is this life? Real people in real places. Phenomenal. Anyways, we had an incredible time together in this acting class. We weren't paired together, but her partner was sick one day or something like that, and I got to act with her in a scene, and it was incredible. She is so talented. We then went out for lunch and hung out and chatted, and I drove her home, and she's just the best, and then I was like, please be on my podcast. And she was. Please enjoy the incredible story of the incredible Salma Darcy. This all come to be? How did it all start?
The basic story I tell people is I have a degree in engineering, and I did engineering because I had to go to university and I had to pay for it myself. So when you're a teenager, this is the way your mind works. I'm like, okay, so what can I do that will earn me money so that I can pay off the student loans that I have after I graduate? Really great career-minded thinking. Not at all. Just get through this next stage of life. I was like, a professional degree is good. A professional degree that doesn't require post-work. Like, within 4 to 5 years, I'll be done. And then I can get out. So engineering it was. And I could do the math and the science. I didn't really like it. I like learning, though, so that part was good. But then when it came to all the testing, all the other stuff, I hated it. I went out and did it. I worked in project management, design and construction, design coordination, construction management work for almost 10 years. And I even tried making it work. Like, I didn't want my degree or anything to go to waste, even though I knew it was a bad decision and it wasn't right for me. I really wanted to try and make the best of it because I had invested all this time and money into it. And I tried. And then as I was coming to, like, later on, I did really incredible work. I helped build buildings that house fantastic institutions. I worked in water and wastewater treatment, like really life-affirming kind of stuff. I worked overseas for a year doing some strategic planning for a large NGO and helping them kind of plan out the areas where they were going to be helping people next. Like, really good work. And at the end of the day, I'd come home and I'm like, I did really good work today and I don't feel fulfilled. And that was really difficult to acknowledge. And when I finally kind of, like, I used earning good money to then, like, save up because I knew I was going to make a change. I didn't know what it was going to be, but it was going to be a change. And I also started taking different classes, like just rediscovering, like, what did I love doing that no one made me do as a kid? And that was really, like, how I started. Like, I used to dance. No one made me do it. I would choreograph my own dances. I would go and, like, submit for shows. We danced in, like, the Cabbage Town Festival parade. Like, there was all kinds of stuff. And we did that ourselves. Like, I did it. I did it with a couple of my friends. And I started there and kind of, like, started the exploration. And, like, when you're in your late 20s, coming up to 30, you can't just suddenly be like, I'm going to be a dancer. Like, every dancer I spoke to at that age, they're like, yeah, we're I'm looking for my next thing.
Yeah.
Because this is the age at which either you know you can make it to a highly competitive level, like being like ballerina for the National Ballet, or you're kind of figuring out what your next step is. Like, how do you, either you're teaching, starting a studio, or in many of our cases, like we looked at acting, because there's still this beautiful creative part. And that's what I found was really missing in my old work, so that there's huge lack of creativity in my work. And that's what I could still find in acting. And then when I was like trying out different things, I took an acting class. It's like, maybe this will be cool. And the ability to be analytical and creative really like hooked me. Like, I get to super analytical for a script. Like, what are they saying? Why are they saying that? How do they feel? Like, all those questions. And it uses my creativity to then give it life and depth and dimensions, like not just three dimensions, but like emotional dimension and all kinds of things that I can't do as a design and construction manager or an engineer.
You are speaking to my soul. Oh my God. Like, so much is like making my brain just go, yay.
Yeah. And that's like one of the things I learned. I'll show you one of my stickies. This is me. I want creativity. I need independence and freedom. I still need to connect with people. I love learning and I want a sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. So like, if it has those things, then I can say yes.
Yeah.
Easy. And if it's missing a major part of that, I know I can pass on it.
Mm-hmm.
So discovering that about myself was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And just reminding myself, like, if I'm feeling unhappy or if I'm feeling like there's lack somewhere, I look at that sticky and I'm like, which area is missing?
Hmm.
And then I'm like, ah. And then I know what I can do. Like, then I can figure it out really quickly. Like, if I'm feeling a lack of connection, I'm like, oh, I can reach out to community. Or, like, sometimes it's a lack of adventure. And I'm like, well, then maybe I need to find another project. Maybe I need to chat with some people and find a sense of adventure. Or maybe I just haven't traveled and I need to get out of town, do some like fun stuff, see a show, something. Yeah.
Tell me a bit more about like those things that are on your sticky.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, when they feel that sensation that you were feeling of, I'm doing a society approved work, I am contributing to society, people are grateful. But when they come home, they're feeling unfulfilled, like you were feeling.
Yeah.
I would think, and I've heard this from others, and I'm feeling it myself, it'd be hard to kind of sit down with yourself and figure out which of those things is the thing that's the most bothering you right now, right? For me, it would be like, hey, I'm feeling blah, and it's a muddle, it's a mess, it's muddy water of all of those things you just listed, and, mm-hmm. you know, different for different people. How do you tease out what is missing? Like, how did you figure out, oh, I need connection right now. Oh, I need adventure right now. How do you figure that out?
I think it's a combination of things. So knowing this list, like making this list, was a huge process in itself.
Yeah.
Like one, so there's a lot of personal development work, like self-discovery that goes into finding this path. And I kind of brushed over that. But just like reading books, like I investigated things like the Firestarter series. I think it's Danielle, I don't know what her name is, but if you look up the Firestarter series, and then I also read Beautiful Money by Leanne Jacobs, which I really appreciated. And her, one of the things she talks about in that book was, think of yourself as a business. Like, if you're going to earn money doing something and you want it to be fulfilling, you have to kind of approach it from the fact that you are a business. So what's your vision statement? What's your mission? What are your company values? And figuring out that, like, I could tell you easily that I want to help people tell their stories with empathy and a sense of humor. That would be my mission or my vision. And I can do that in multiple ways. I don't have to be an actor to fulfill that. And these would be like the little list is kind of like my values or my, yeah, if I was a company, it would be like the values, like teamwork would be a value or integrity is a value. Creativity, like approaching everything with that draws on my creativity is going to make me successful as me as a company. Though I don't like to think of myself as a company, it's very impersonal. It helped me to arrange my thoughts to figure out what it was that I needed as an individual without society telling me anything. And so having done all of that work, sorry, my cat just jumped on the back of a chair and almost knocked over a light. Okay, he's all good.
I love when cats.
He's four months old.
He oh does my goodness.
Interesting things. So I was just saying that like it's a lot of work to come to that point. And you asked me how I know it's one of these things. It's usually because I'm lost in the weeds that I haven't looked at this list. But as soon as I come back to the list, I can see it right away. It'll jump out at me. And it's having done all that work that makes it then easier to know what's missing. Because this is very specific to me. For somebody else, connection may actually mean family. Or it could be socializing. And that can be like so... that word, so picking your words and knowing what those are makes it easier to then, like, when you feel overwhelmed or unclear, it'll become clear as soon as you see that, because it's like 3 to 5 things that will be specific to you.
I really like that. It's very, and you know, the word grounded gets thrown around in our business all the time, but I think it is, it's kind of like a, well, it makes you come back to, and again this is going to sound wooey, but it makes you come back almost to home, like home base, home values, home integrity, mission statement, right? Exactly. What you were saying, and that's really empowering, I think, as a human. And I think it's something that a lot of us were missing in the careers that we were doing before.
And you have to kind of, I learned like that idea that I didn't want to let go of my engineering degree or like all the experience that I had and how much success I had in that career. Like I was on my way to doing a lot of amazing things with fancy titles and like meeting really amazing people and coming to a point where I could accept that I had learned a lot of skills. But I didn't need to hang on or leverage the degree. I didn't have to leverage the specific titles. I was leveraging the skills that I had learned.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And that was a tough one for me to get to that point. Like letting go of my license. You're a licensed physician. Can you imagine saying, I'm not going to renew my license this year? It was really hard. And I did that a few years ago and it was freeing because I was like, but I never want to do that. I don't want to work in an office. Or like, can you imagine saying, I don't want to work with patients. I don't want to help people anymore. And it's not what I'm saying. Like I had to kind of like find the balance for me and then be like, okay, let it go. Don't renew. And it's really hard. There's no process for saying I don't want to have a license. Can you cancel my engineering license? There's no process. There's just like you just don't pay for it.
Oh my God.
There's and then no, you like, don't pay for
fanfare.
It.
There's no way to be like, no, wait, come back. Are you sure?
Oh, there is. Oh, there is. You don't pay for it. And then they send you letters. They're like,
oh my
if
God.
You don't pay for it, death like if you don't renew, then cuts. You'll have to go back to the beginning and like redo your whole licensing process and your experience and everything else. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. I'll just ignore that and I'll ignore the next one. And they're like, you have 30 days. Like,
oh my God. Do you-
this is giving me anxiety by proxy right now.
Yeah. It was so difficult because there's no letter that you can write and just be like, cancel this. And then they're like, okay, great. We'll cancel it. Done. They're just like, you don't pay. And then it'll pass. See, I can feel it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What? Like, there must have been, well, it's a grieving process, right? Like, it's a huge loss. It's almost like a, this sounds horrible, an abusive relationship.
Oh, no.
Where they're just, right? But it's like, are you sure? Are you sure? Let me gaslight you. This is your fault. You put in so much money. You've worked really hard. Oh, you want to be an actor? What does that contribute to society? Remember when you went overseas and helped an NGO?
Yeah.
Like, but my one beautiful, precious life.
Yeah. And you're going to give up all of your income?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was making almost six figures. Like, it was not something easy to walk away from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because I talk to people who've had similar situations, right? Like, I've talked to, like, lawyers and doctors, engineers, people who make a lot of money, yes, but it's because of the amount of, like, you know, education and stuff like that that you had to go through. That's a whole other conversation in and of itself, whatever. But it's usually these career paths that required such tunnel vision focus for an extended amount of time, usually in your glory days, your 20s, where you can't look at anything else around you. They don't let you look at anything else around you, but also you shouldn't look at anything else around you because this is how you become successful in this.
Yeah.
And then when you want to give that all away, it's
people think you're crazy.
People think you're crazy, but because it's your identity, it's your social life, it's status, it's the sunk cost fallacy. You've put a ton of money in.
Yeah.
You've put your mental health on the line. You've put your I didn't have any gray hair before I went to medical school. Like, my friends were all traveling around and trying to find themselves in their 20s. I was stuck in the library. Like, you don't want to give that up. And it's a huge exercise in sunk cost fallacy, right? Where it's like, it's a cult. It's a cult. It's a cult.
100%. God. And then getting out of it. Yeah.
Oh.
And I couldn't have done it.
Clearly they made it hard for you.
I couldn't have done it without my husband. I would say, like, when I was thinking about, like, you send questions and ideas and prep, and I was listening to some of the previous interviews, and I was like, I can't do this without support.
Yeah.
And when people ask me about it, I'm like, plan for it. Plan for your jump. Save money, because right now you're making money. Save. And then make sure you have support. Like, my husband was like, yeah, you should do this. We had a kid. One of us should be happy. Like, one of us should be around to, like,
oh my Lord.
To like be there. Otherwise, if we both stayed on this career path, we'd be hiring someone to take care of our kid. And he would be raised by somebody else. Or, like, we would hardly see him because when they're tiny, they sleep 12 to 14 hours a day, like, until they start getting older. Like, now he sleeps less. But that kind of stuff. So he was just like, if you know something that's going to make you happy, do it. One of us needs to do it. One of us needs to show our child what it is like to be, like, fulfilled by how you spend your day all day. Right now my husband comes home and he's stressed and he's just like, I need time to disconnect from my day so that I can actually express how much I love being with my family. Because it's a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this made me think of, one, like, all the differences between different generations. But you said something right at the beginning, and it was, I was a teenager and I needed to go to university to do a career and I needed to pay for it myself.
Yeah.
Did that come from, was that, like, something that happened because your family was like, you have to go to university, you have to pay for it yourself, or somebody around you? Or was it just you saying, this is a value that I have? Where'd that come from?
Family, for sure.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. definitely like immigrant parents.
Mm-hmm.
I was born here. My parents were born elsewhere.
Yep.
They had to do a lot of it themselves. Cool. And also they couldn't afford to help me, but they wanted it to be good for me. Like they wanted a better life for me. And they're like, we can't afford to do it. So when you apply for OSAP, you'll get the full amount. There won't be any problem there. We don't make any money. And so it was just always there. And I never, like, there were no artists in my family. We didn't have a lot of people. Sorry. There's like a little baby.
Hi. Like, who is this?
This is Rafiki.
Oh my gosh. Hi, Rafiki.
Yeah.
You're my second cat guest.
Attention. His sister got, so they got neutered and sprayed. We went totally off topic. You can edit this part.
No, I love when cats come in. I had, like, Jesse Griffiths brought in his dogs. Oh, my friend Ahmed brought in his cat named Mona. I'm like, I love this.
Yeah. They got neutered and sprayed, and her space, like, her surgery just happened earlier this week. And they can't be playing. Like, her stitches don't come out until next week.
Oh, no.
So my husband Matt took her to his office, and he's just like, I'll keep her there. I was like, please keep her there, because yesterday I listened to her cry all day, because I have to keep them separated. They can't wrestle and play. Yeah. And so
what's
he's
the
like,
other cat's name?
Kali.
Rafiki. Holly? H-A-L?
Kali. Like Kali, the Hindu goddess.
Oh my god, cool.
Yeah, she is the awesome. Destroyer of demons, and his name means friend in Swahili.
Oh, I love it. That is the best. Love it. I love cats. I love, love, love cats. Mine will probably start scratching at my door in a few minutes when she hears my voice. She's just like, hey, what you doing in there? I want to come in. Let's hang out.
Yeah, I couldn't do that to him again today. So
he's here with me.
They're 4 months old.
Oh, it's such a family. Little baby.
We were trying to socialize them and make sure that they're not hiding, that they feel like they can come and chat with us, hang out. Yeah. All right. So I was saying something about my family and how we're an immigrant family, and I didn't have any artists in my family. And so, yeah, I didn't really know what to do. Like, my ideas of what was out there were very limited. Like, my family would be like, oh, you really like to read. Maybe you could be a lawyer. Or you like science. Maybe you could be a doctor. These very, like, broad generalizations. And there's so much in between and outside of that, those ideas. So it was kind of like, if I did a science degree, then I'd work in a lab. And I'm like, I don't want to work in a lab. And English classes, like writing, I didn't want to do any arts degree because it would involve a lot of writing, and I hated writing. And I realized later on that I hated writing because I had to write about things that had no personal connection to me. Like, teachers would be like, Shakespeare is universal, or like Bronte or Tom Hardy or whoever it was, like some British person. I'm like, you guys have no connection to my life. Huh. They all like no connection to how I was growing up or like the experiences I was having. And so I hated writing. And I realized later on, because I also did, like, side note, I went and did like a postgraduate public relations certificate. I'm shy of 2 courses because I also realized I wasn't going to work in public relations, but I enjoyed it because I like learning. I loved writing because now I had writing with purpose. And that was really cool.
Right.
So like, and then I was like, oh, and then creative writing, because I like creative things. Like these, like, so that's how like I figured out that those 5 things that kind of determine where my fulfillment comes from. Was figuring out a lot of that stuff, trying things. And that's how I ended up in engineering, because all of those other things, to bring it back, was all of those other ideas didn't work. Even co-op, like co-op didn't help that much. Guidance counselors don't do this process of figuring out what fulfills you and then finding careers like that. Even like, I don't know, those like color things that they do in high school where they're like, oh, if you're orange, you'll want to be a priest, or like a counselor. I don't know. Like, none of that really was helpful because I had no idea what it meant to be a counselor or what it means. Like, what is that like day to day? How does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was a different path.
Well, and I think the mundaneness of careers is never talked about. And I think like there can be so much joy in the mundane of some of people in some of the careers, and there should be in a career that you love. And like I think about some of the mundane things you have to do in a creative career, in the acting career. And like I still really enjoy doing them because I see them as the steps to the what makes it so wonderful. Yeah. And I think about the mundane in medicine, and I'm like, and I say this all the time, I'm like, if anyone had told me this about the paperwork and just the ridiculous stuff I have to deal with, I would never, ever, ever have gone into it. If it was just about the medicine,
yeah,
absolutely. I love the medicine. I love the science. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's learning. But like, if it was just about that, sure, great. But nobody told me about the base of the pyramid. What you have to do day to day to day to day, right? And I think yes. And I wonder if it's changing in society because we don't really, like, the generations below us don't really have career aspirations.
No.
Like, I just want to make money to survive so I can do the fun things.
Yeah.
Where us,
there
it was
is definitely
like,
a lot steps, more steps, talk steps. About what brings you fun and joy. What are you having fun doing? And I think that's a great starting point. Because there will be stuff you hate about everything you do. Nothing is perfect.
Course.
Like sitting around and waiting on set is the worst, like, buzzkill. Like, that's not creative. While I sit around and wait or like have a conversation with someone about something completely unrelated and then I have to be on. You know, like those kinds of things, not fun.
Yeah.
Sitting around and waiting, not fun. As a non-union worker, I'm not union right now. Making sure that I get paid and following up on that stuff. That's not a fun part of any job. I don't want to be an accounts receivable person.
But a business needs one.
But a business needs one, exactly. That part I had no idea when I was started doing this, how entrepreneurial, how much it is like starting your own business.
See.
That's part of that mundane of like setting it all up, seeing it as a team, seeing all of my auditions as proposals.
Yeah.
Because we're going to make a story or build a film as a team. And so we're like, there's a lead, like the director, the producers are there trying to build their team. And I'm offering a proposal of like, here's how I would portray this character. Here's the energy that I bring. Here's the like the thoughtfulness that I have put into this. And do you think it'll match? It's a proposal to me.
Yeah, I like that. And I think one of the big reasons why we see such atrophy and people quitting acting is just quitting any business because they don't realize the mundane, right? They don't realize that. I think it's especially notorious in the creative careers when people only see the outcome, only see the finished product. And then when they actually are in the thick of it, they're shocked at how boring it is, right? How much waiting around it is and stuff like that. But I think I like that because, again, it makes you realize that you are part of the bigger picture as opposed to like the actor makes the movie, right? No. Like you're just one part of this. You're just one proposal for a bigger build.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask a quick question? And a lot of people I talk to who've had scientific careers, I did a physics degree. I love math, like love math. And my analytical brain loves that. And there's a worry I know that I had when I started doing more creative stuff, that if I started thinking about so much of the script analysis, so much of the math, of the science, of the physics of a scene, of the business of it all, that the creativity would get pushed aside. or would be lessened. There just wouldn't be, like, I only have space for so much and I'm so much analytical and the creativity is now gone and now it looks too engineered. Oh, geez, that's bad.
Okay.
But, like, was that something that ever came up for you?
I think it comes up in different ways, but yeah, it does come up. Because I try and get coaching and I'm in class regularly and that's where I'll see it. If I've overthought something, a coach or an instructor will remind me to like stop thinking about it because they can see it.
And I think one of the things that happened, it's funny that you bring this up, there is a new balance to be found.
So
I was doing crazy like analytical work, project management, like construction project management is unlike other project management. It is not going to be like IT project management where things happen. Like if people who know what I'm saying will know what I'm saying. Like IT project management, the steps are always the same. It's a little bit more predictable when like you do those PMPs. That's what it's kind of designed for. It doesn't work in a construction project because each project will be so unique to itself. The logistics of it, the like how you do things, the order of things. I also did, instead of doing buildings from new, all the things I did were retrofit buildings. So you're working with existing conditions, trying to upgrade structure, trying to build something new while the other side of it is live. So while like a system is running. So there is like, it required something of me that I needed to, how do I describe this? It's a different skill. And I was like really sharp. Because my husband once looked at me, he's like, you've gone soft. And it wasn't soft. It was a joke. It was just that like my brain wasn't so hyped up all the time anymore because I balanced in with more creativity. It wasn't that I wasn't smart enough or not capable to do those things. It was that I let go of that high pressure situation and that need to like have my brain work that way because I don't need it anymore. Like I don't need to run my home like I did in a construction site or a design project where you're like, okay, we gotta like, if we don't hit the design deadline, if we don't get these deadlines, if we don't hit this, like who do I need to push? Whose fire needs to be bigger so that they get it done? I don't need to do that. Like the people, the things that I manage now is just my life. I think in that sense of like, you'll refine it. Maybe that's what, like it's a, it's a more refined analytical side of myself that comes out so that I do invite the creativity in. And I'm not using the like super, super skills on my script. I'm bringing in the creative feeling side as part of the analytical. Like, I don't know if I described that right, but...
And that makes total sense. And I think it mirrors what you said a little earlier that, and it was a big realization for me, is that none of the skills that you have learned disappear in a puff of smoke when you decide to change your career.
Yeah.
And there's so many transferable skills. Yeah, the piece of paper doesn't transfer. But your skills that you've developed over time are not just going to leave you and you have like, and that is who you are. Do you notice anything else that you've been able to bring in from your engineering career into acting?
Yeah, lots. I think, and it's those skills. But like when I first started, I would look up like what makes a successful actor. Like you'd see these like top 10 skills for a successful actor, all these things. And like 9 out of them are things like show up on time, do your homework, you know, like manage your time, get there on time. Like all these like things that reinforce the idea of a flaky artist. And I was like, oh. And like that they needed to be reminded of like basically do your job makes me a good actor. And so I was just like, and those are the skills that I bring. Like, I know how to show up on time. I know how to do my homework. I know how to, like, maybe memorizing is a new skill, but I know how, if I know it's a skill I will struggle with, if I know it's something that'll take me more time, I know that I need to allow for more time for that. Right? Like, I know that it's not, I can't do it the night before. This is something that I will have to start doing a few days before, a week before, depending on how much of it is. And yeah, so a lot. Like, anyone who's looked at those lists of, like, what makes you successful, be professional. Like, don't come in and hug people. I'm like, who hugs people? Like, you don't hug a stranger unless you've asked them. So, like, things that come from the business world, like, learning the etiquette was super quick and easy. I'm like, it's a professional situation. Don't make it personal. I don't announce my personal life when I walk into a meeting. So when I go into an audition room, I'm not going to announce my personal life. So those kinds of things, like, are all those little things. Like, yeah, I brought all those skills in with me. And it was just working on the skills that are very specific to acting. Things like memorizing, or the creativity, learning to trust myself, learning to be vulnerable in a space that's not really safe for vulnerability. Like, that was one of the things I learned, was going into an audition room, you have to learn to be vulnerable in an unsafe space, which your body will be like, you don't cry in front of strangers. Like, you don't show this level of emotion. Yeah, you do it in private in your room, which is what you learn as a kid. Oh my God, you're crying. Go to your room.
Like, go to your room. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, well, I brought a lot of those, like, regular professional skills that we learn.
It's so funny, because the whole time when you're saying, I'm laughing in my head, laughing out loud, because what is so great about that is all of those things, like you're saying, we all have them from our careers before. They will never leave. They're also ingrained in us. Like,
yeah,
I don't do things the night before. I don't cram. I've never been that type of person.
Yeah.
So I'm going to show up. I'm going to be prepared. I know tech stuff is easy, right? Everything, all of this stuff, 9 out of 10 things that you just listed, easy peasy. That's me. No problem. I'm a delight. I'll be there on time. I'll be professional. I'll be courteous. I'm going to do a great job. But what's really cool about having all these things already in our arsenal, because they're part of our soul, they're part of our nature, is that I think that now leaves room to do all the creative stuff.
Yeah.
Because my brain energy doesn't have to worry about, oh no, will she be professional? Of course she's going to be professional. I always will and always have been. That's me. That's my nature.
Yeah.
I don't have to act professional.
Yeah.
It's just me.
I don't have to hold back something to be the professional.
Like, I don't have to stand there and be like, don't say that out loud, Janet. Like, no, that's not a thing. So it allows space, because my body can and brain can rest knowing that I don't have to, like, don't have to do that, because it's already a thing that I know. But then, of course, you're like, great, now I have to learn the acting.
Which is huge. It's a totally different skill.
Tell me more about that, like, that vulnerability piece, because I think both of us come from careers and I think family upbringings where vulnerability wasn't really, it's not praised, let's say.
Yeah.
It's restraint is praised, right? So, tell me more about that. How's that been?
Oh, that's a huge, like, so I'm going to start general. I'm going to say that I think a lot of people, when they come to acting, or they discover acting as a possible career or, like, something to add to what they do, I think we do it, and there are so many actors, because there is emotional freedom. Because it's the one place where you are allowed to express emotion. And I think culturally, you're not really allowed to. You're not allowed to say, I feel something. You're allowed to say, I think. But to say I feel is, and whatever, is not as accepted. It's not as welcome. It's like you said, it's not celebrated in any way. It's looked down upon.
Mm-hmm. And yet acting comes along and you have this freedom to say, I feel. And you are expected to say, I feel. You're invited and asked to do that. And I think it becomes very attractive to a lot of people because we're not welcomed to have emotions in this world right now. Mm. So that's my general statement about why I think a lot of people like acting and why there are so many actors. And I think it's good. It's a safe space for your emotions. For me in particular, I think part of it was I was always a highly sensitive kid. Like everyone remembers, they're like, you could sneeze and Selma would cry.
Mm.
Like that kind of thing. Like tears were always on the verge of my face. So highly sensitive, not welcome in my family because it was too much. Like they had enough stuff going on, and to have the emotional capacity to then also be there for a sensitive kid. Like I don't blame them for it. They were trying to survive and I did what I had to do to survive. And I tamped all that down. I built really big, thick walls to protect me. And engineering just reinforced that. Engineering was like, yeah, you are good at your job because you have these thick walls, because other people's stress and the pressure doesn't get to you. Like the world is falling apart. My boss is like, you seem very calm. I'm like, well, I don't see how I'll be helpful if I fall apart. And so it was good. Like it rewarded me for having these super thick walls. And because you're calm under pressure, people are like, great, we can give her more responsibility. And that's where my success came about, because I had these thick walls. And it took a lot of work, like personal work, professional work. Like I remember being in class and the scene had the other character yelling at my character. And I needed to defend myself or at least say something in return. And so my scene partner, amazing scene partner, brought it. Like, he brought it. And my reaction was to shut it down. And that was a huge learning moment, because the instructor, like up until then, I was doing fine. And I discovered this very strong personal thing, because in my family, yelling happened a lot. And you were safe when you had no reaction to it. And we watched, like we recorded it, and you see me have nothing. And he's like, you need to react to that. And I'm like, I am reacting to it. You just can't see it. Like this, like learning about being a person. And for myself, like there are a lot of moments and there are a lot of acting classes or acting skills classes where you learn to show your emotions. They're very therapeutic. But there is a reminder that this is not therapy. Because for me to take down those walls, I needed to have some level of therapy. And I didn't go professionally, but I did need to recognize that I need to address the personal reasons why these walls were built. And it can't be, I can't put that on my acting teachers or on my acting scene partners. Like that's something I needed to do on my own and then bring some of that work and figure out where my own lines are. Because there are things that as actors, we should be able to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable doing that. But you can't know that unless you've done some level of personal work. Otherwise, you end up like using chemical substitutes to help you manage, which is so dangerous. And there are so many stories of actors who have suffered because of those chemical use, chemical abuse, pharmaceuticals. Because even a physician, they're not going to help you with therapy. They're going to be like, you tell me that you have this problem and wait, I do have a pharmaceutical you can use to help you. And then there's like the upper and the downer and the upper and the downer, because in order to do challenging storytelling,
really in-depth stuff, the stuff that like our physiological reaction when we're watching TV and we're so drawn in is because that person is feeling that for real. That actor is feeling it for real. And for an actor to do that, like you carry a lot. And that process of discovery for myself was like, some days was good, some days was not good. And in the end, I think it's a benefit because now I have access to emotion that was behind like really thick walls, like trapped in a box, buried deep in the ground, unmarked. And yeah, so like, I don't know if I answered that well.
Yes. You know, and I think I relate to that a lot, and it's something that I've discussed with a lot of other second act actors who, like exactly what we were saying, one came from immigrant families or even just families who said emotion is weakness, don't show it, or when you cry, go to your room. So as a personal anecdote, that was how I was raised. And last summer I was in a play where I had to cry. And the tears came fine because I know how to cry. I can cry. I cried in Matilda. but my initial reaction, and the director caught it every time, was to turn my whole body upstage, away from the audience. Mm-hmm. And like try and flee, right? Try to flee.
Yeah, to hide it because you're supposed to you're not supposed to show it to everybody.
Not supposed to show it. And I think the importance of therapy cannot be understated. And I've said this a bajillion times. Some of the best days in acting class are the days when I can get to those raw emotions and it feels so good. But I know I can bring myself out of that and not live in it for weeks and destroy my family and destroy my friendships because I'm method acting.
Yeah.
Is because I've been in therapy.
Yeah.
100%.
Because you're able to recognize like, and be able to say to yourself, I'm stepping in and now I know how to get out, which is.
Because your brain doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
It's like you're crying. It doesn't know you're crying on stage.
No.
Right? You need to be able to, like you're saying, tap in, tap out.
Yeah. So and your the tapping brain is out aware. Is a huge part of it. Like getting in, everyone's like, yeah, I can get in. But like the getting out,
getting
the not
out.
Carrying it, like taking it off and setting it aside so that you can live your real life, that skill is really important.
Absolutely.
Very difficult, still learning.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to keep – that one's going to be for a long time.
Well, and I think that's also – it's the corny lifelong learning that I know you – like you love, I love. But I think that's also like a human thing. Like there's literally no way that you can – finish all the Girl Scout badges of learning how to process your emotions.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a continuous thing. And I think that's why I totally agree with you. That's why acting is so exciting because it literally never will end because you're constantly rediscovering something because it's constantly a new human.
Yeah.
Hmm. Do you have any more advice for people looking to change careers into acting? You've given a ton of incredible advice already.
What would I say in addition to like support, plan, community? I think community is key.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked too much about community. Like I'm going to talk about, we rescheduled this interview a couple times. And the last time we rescheduled it was because I had an audition. And that audition required the support of, I think, four people. You helped me because there was a medical component, which was awesome. I'm so glad that I was like, oh, wait a second. And you like offered help. And I was like, this is incredible. Like you just took off one step of that, which was so easy. It required an accent, which I needed some help with, and speaking in a second language. I got help with that. I got a coach for the acting part because I was already doing all these other things. And it was 5 pages of script. And I had a reader. So to do a 5-page audition required 5 people. So yeah, like community, like just to do that one audition It was a more challenging audition, I'll give you that. Like, most auditions don't require another language and an accent or like medical technical stuff.
Medical jargon, yeah.
Yeah. And like, what does it mean to have a seizure? What kind of seizure? What are they talking about? Like, most of them don't. But when you build a community, when you start talking to people, because not everyone that I spoke to, like, we haven't acted together before. We're not really, like, I think the first time I met you was a voiceover class. And then we didn't really chat until I saw you at another event. The person who helped me with the language stuff is a friend of the family. So, like, that kind of community, it's beyond just like your tiny circle. And I'm an introvert, so my circles tend to be smaller. If you're an extrovert, this is easy for you. But yeah, building that community, not being afraid to like, we're being vulnerable. Be vulnerable for your profession. Be vulnerable outside of just the acting and chat with people. And when some people are like, what does that mean? Or like, my mom was great. My mom. She asked me how things were going when I first started. And I said, oh, I had like 10 auditions. She's like, oh, did you get one? And I was like, no, I didn't. Like, I didn't book any of those 10 auditions. And she's like, oh, maybe you should think of doing something else. It's like, that's not how it works. And I was very reactive because this was early on. And I was just like, no. And I walked away. I just had to move on from that. But now I can say that's not how it works. Like, you will do 10 auditions and you will get nothing. And that's perfectly normal. You'll feel like you've done 10 interviews and not gotten a job. And it's not the same. So that kind of that shift and being able to have the calmness to respond to people who are just like trying to be curious about your life and this change that you're including into it, that you're making. Yeah. 10 auditions. Maybe you should change careers. Like, maybe you should let this one go now and move on to something else.
You tried.
Yeah.
Time to quit.
And have community so that you can go and tell these stories and they get it.
And we get it. Yeah.
They get it. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, my mom said the same thing. She said it last week, though, and I've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah. Do you think, would your parents or family describe you as an actor these days?
I think they've started to. It took me a while to say it without adding something else to it, without being like, but I just started. Or like, I used to be an engineer. Or like, trying to justify it or be like, I'm better than an actor because actors have a bad reputation.
Yep.
Yeah. It's funny because you either have a bad reputation or you're like Viola Davis. Like, and people are like, oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I remember chatting. Well, that's the thing, right? And I think that's where a lot of people don't, again, it's the mundane working actor.
Yeah.
Is a career.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't even know that was a thing until I started doing this podcast and I met a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Like, you're just a working actor. I say just not to minimize what they're doing, but you know what I mean? They're not Brie Larson.
Yeah.
They're working and they're making a living and they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Working actor. I'm like, oh.
Working actor.
Didn't know what.
I spoke to somebody else and I was like, you know, not everybody is the CEO. Not everybody is a president. There's middle management.
Ooh.
You know, the ones who show up, do their job, and then they go home. They're middle management and they make
a
living.
Great analogy. Yes.
And that's where most people are. And it's good.
And it's good. Yes. And that's the thing, right? It's what makes the company work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure we would all like to be the CEO one day. But right now, I kind of want to be that person who just says, here's your coffee, Samuel L. Jackson's character.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Would love that.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite moments from being on set or being in class or anything like that so far?
I don't know. I love being in class. I have to say that's definitely one of my favorite places because I get to experiment I get to try different things. I can push myself and I meet people, like other people who are acting. The people who read for me are people that I met in class mostly. And one person I met doing background who's in the same situation, who gets it, like we can chat about it. We have time during the day, unlike most other people who have regular jobs, who have real jobs.
Can you read for me? It's 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like I definitely, class is my favorite place right now. Like, there are some fun things. I don't know, like people will come back to this, and I finally had a commercial I did get a ton of airplay, which, like, I'll say it here, like H&R Block Canada, Quiet Quitting. It was on, like, they threw money to get, like, so much airplay. And it was very exciting to finally people, like, message and be like, oh, my God, I saw you. That's so cool. Congratulations. I keep hearing your voice. I keep seeing your face. It was nice to have that. I'd say, like, that's a highlight. Even though in the moment, absolutely, I'm like, guys, I've been doing this for a while now. It just happens that I, like, some company was like, we're going to invest a lot of money. I think, oh, on that same note, my husband said something really nice. Like, when I talk about people who are supportive, I was just like, I did the job and, like, I'm really happy that I got selected for it. And he commented and he made this observation that they knew they were going to spend this much money to, like, get the airplay that it's gotten. They knew, and they hired you. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Like, those are the nice things that people make. Like, yes. For him to say that was just like, oh, I didn't even think of that. And he's like, and they hired you.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, if when it comes, like, one day, if I ever get a chance to make an acceptance speech, he's going to be at the top of that list.
Hell yeah. That's for wonderful.
The things he says. Yeah. Like that. Like, I didn't even think of that.
What an observation. Yeah. What an observation from somebody external, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's just how powerful.
Yeah. So take that with you. Like, all the work you've done, and, like, when someone puts it out there, they knew that it was going to cost them money to do that. Even entering a film festival, those thoughts and plans are happening beforehand. And when they hire you as an actor, even if it's an indie project and you're like, oh, it's free, or a student project, like, they hired you knowing that they're going to do something with that, wanting to do something with that. And they picked you. So for all those moments when you have low self-esteem, because that happens a lot when you're an actor, because there's so much rejection and it's difficult to shed that. Even the little projects, you never know what's going to happen. And it's kind of like, I was just like, woohoo, I booked a commercial. No one's going to see. That's what I thought when I booked it. I was just like, I'm going to get paid. And then they went big with it, which was kind of fun. So yeah, you asked about highlights. Oh, I had highlights. Not just class, which I really love doing, but like...
Do you have any final words of wisdom or advice?
I think we covered it. I don't know if I have final words.
I know, it's so hard when, like, this has been pure gold.
I was just like, find your reason why. And it's the more you, this is what I'm, I think I will share with people, like, the final words. What I am really starting to accept right now and embrace and lean into is the more I am me, the better my work will be. Oh my God, I just made it rhyme too. The more I am me, the better my work will be. So you can add that to a sticky if you're into that kind of thing. Because I have a friend who books commercials often, and I asked her about one of her auditions. Because we both, like, we end up auditioning for a lot of the same things. And I asked her, because I was just like,
I don't know what I did. It was kind of weird. Sometimes they ask you about weird things. And I looked at her audition. And I was just like, that's all her. It's beautiful because I can see her in it. And I know her, so I see her in it. And she booked it. And I was like, so I was very excited for her. But to see it, I was like, ah. And it reinforced the idea of like, the more I am me, the better I can be.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thank you, Salma, for being my guest this week. Y'all, I check how to pronounce everyone's name, right? I would check if your name was John Smith. I would ask you to send me a voice note how to pronounce your name. And Salma sent me how to pronounce her name. And it was the most delightful voice note ever. She said her name beautifully in her beautiful, beautiful voice and said some lovely things as well, too. And I will probably keep that voice note forever because she is such a gem, as you just heard. I hope you will all tune in next week for another episode of Second Act Actors. Bye.